Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi and welcome to Streets Ahead, your podcast dedicated to all things cycling, walking and wheeling in the UK and beyond. I'm Autonomous Sally.
My name is Ned Bolting.
I'm Laura Laker.
And I'm Adam Tranter.
And in this action-packed episode, Laura is going to take a ride in an almost autonomous car. But before we get to that, Adam, what have you been up to? Because we know what Laura's just been up to. I've already spilled the beans. What's been ticking your boxes recently?
I've been building an old bicycle up into sort of a Dutch bike, which has kept me entertained. I've been discovering the woes of electric charging infrastructure. My wife now has an electric car that she does a couple of long journeys every week. And I've been trying to get it installed like a point on my house, on the side of my house for like what seems like a month and a half now. And then every time I go to go and get it charged somewhere, someone else is using the charger and there's always like an awkward chat about it. So I've been spending most of my life being owned by cars, basically.
That sounds like my experience of, do you remember the fuel strike years and years and years ago when eventually, I mean, they run out of petrol, didn't they? Almost within about 24 hours and everyone panicked. And then some of the garages for essential workers only would allow you to put £5 worth of petrol in or something like that. And it coincided with the weekend that I won in a raffle the use of a Ferrari for no reason whatsoever. I'd forgotten I'd even entered the raffle, and then I got this Ferrari Spider delivered to my house. And my other half, my partner, is a nurse, and I put her in the front in the passenger seat. And I just went from petrol station to petrol station, putting £5 worth of petrol in. And the £5 of petrol would just about get me to the next petrol station.
Amazing.
It wasn't a very ethical thing to do with hindsight.
Oh my
but
God.
It was a long time ago. I've come on a long journey since then. Laura, I quite regret telling you that. But anyway, Laura, what have you been up to?
Well, I'm obviously out of isolation a long time ago, and I've been making up for being trapped at home by cycling a lot.
Brilliant.
Cycling across town. Yeah, it's great, actually. I've been over to Hampstead. I've been using my e-bike with abandon. I've been out to the North Circular to pick it up, got fixed. And I've been, and everywhere I go, there seems to be like a new cycle lane or a new low traffic area. And it's been amazing. I even went out to the North Downs. The other weekend, doing a test ride for Timmy Mallett, who is also keen on cycling. A friend was taking him out on a gravel ride to introduce him to a friend at Cycling UK was taking him out on a gravel ride to introduce him to cycling because he's a big cycling enthusiast apparently. So he and a vicar, his local vicar, went out on the North Downs, and I think they bivvied out. And then so we did the test ride just to check it was suitable for Timmy Mallett. So that was quite fun.
I mean, I got so many questions about that, but that would fill up.
That's not what the podcast is about.
It would fill up. Yeah, we'd better concentrate on the matter in hand. Actually, just briefly before we get on to talking about autonomous travel, I'm in Germany at the moment for work, and I've just come back from borrowing a hotel bike and cycling into the very beautiful town of Schwerin, where I'm staying on the outskirts of. Obviously, I'm in a big hotel on the ring road. But what was quite interesting was I kind of tried to follow their network of Germany's network of, you know, cycle paths. And it was certainly better than what we've got back home, but it wasn't without its confusions and its inadequacies. So, I mean, they do some stuff, very basic stuff, much better than we do, like prioritizing the cycle paths when they cross an intersection, you know. But they are pretty confusing as well. And occasionally, I'm afraid, they too just give up. They don't actually have a standardized sign that says cyclist dismount, but they do occasionally just throw you into the road and say, good luck. So...
So better than the UK, but not a five-star situation.
No, not really. No.
But Ness, you found yourself going viral recently with you sort of looking at cycle lanes and priorities across side roads. That was incredible.
I was angry. I was up in the northeast, and I was on a really crap bit of infrastructure along this beautiful bit of coastline just north of Sunderland. And it was just classic. It wasn't particularly unusual in the sense that, you know, it's just everywhere all over the UK, isn't it? It was one of those very, very narrow cycle paths that you share on a crumbly, you know, pavement while a road rattles alongside you. And every 200 metres at least, you were giving way to little side roads. And it just struck me as an opportunity to, because it was such a bad or good example of bad infrastructure, just to say... to do an explanatory, non-ranty video. I don't think it's particularly ranty, just saying this is the reason why, if you've ever wondered why a lot of cyclists just ignore this infrastructure, this is why. And I thought I'd put it up there and it would kind of get a niche, couple of thousand people watching it. But actually, last time I looked, I think 250,000 people have viewed it.
Blimey.
And it really struck a chord. So that was interesting. So maybe we could revisit that subject at some point in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I saw that. It needed to be said. I was I went out with my sister and some of her colleagues on a little walk over the summer. And this very nice older lady was saying that, I told her I like cycling. And she told me a story about her daughter who was in Exeter, and there's a cycle lane on the pavement, and there was a cyclist not on the pavement going down this hill, and the daughter got angry with the cyclist, yelled at them as they went past, and then realized that the light up ahead was about to go red, and so sped through the red light to get away from potential repercussions with the cyclist. And it's hard to know how to address that. I mean, I said, well, you know, sometimes people don't use the pavement cycle paths because they're problematic. Maybe they were going too fast. They didn't feel like it was safe. But yeah, she kind of seemed to think it was all right. And that, yeah, breaking the law in one way was okay if you got to yell at someone on a bike.
Was she saying this as if this was your fault, Laura? Like you could have a word with your fellow cyclist?
I don't know. She was genuinely a lovely lady. But yeah, there's this kind of disconnect that we have between, like, you know, I don't know, how we treat people and then how we treat people when they're on bikes. But yeah, it was quite interesting. We probably all had a conversation like this at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I think we do sometimes just have to sort of, we're often treated as if we're kind of spokespeople for, you know, an entire community, or representative of an entire community of people. It's nuts.
But it did need saying.
But so cycling and cyclists are one of the problems that you encountered on your little, or one of the potential problems you thought you might encounter on your little your little trip in an autonomous car. Just to give some context to what we're about to hear, driverless cars, connected and autonomous vehicles, or AVs is the acronym, are coming apparently, but they are a solution to a problem. But are they a solution to a problem, or are they just tech for tech's sake? That's the question. The UK, as a government, is betting big time on AVs. The government wants to make the UK a hub for this technology and has invested £200 million into research and development already. Government estimates that by 2035, AVs will be worth nearly £42 billion, creating around 38,000 new jobs. How do they work that out? And also somehow delivering on commitments to, quote, build back greener. That's the government's connection, not ours. It estimates 40% of new cars sold by 2035 could have self-driving capabilities. Lane-keeping technology could be on UK motorways by the end of the year, so long as you don't drive at more than 37 MPH. So this is being trialed at the moment in various different ways. The Endeavour trial, launched in March 2019, is run by Oxbotica, the Oxford Robotics Company, with DG Cities, Immense, TRL, BSI and the Oxfordshire County Council. We sent Laura Laker to investigate.
Yeah, okay, so we're at Project Endeavour. You are?
My name is Balaj and I work at DG Cities.
Yeah.
And we have been working on the Project Endeavour for about two and a half years now.
And are you a robotics expert?
No, I'm unfortunately I'm not.
Because I noticed it's because we've got like Oxbotica, you've got DG Cities, and you've got Immense, so like three different.
Yeah, so and then also kind of TRL, yeah. Oxford Street Council and BSI kind of, yeah. So the six organizations have been working this project as a consortium.
Okay.
So as DG Cities, our role has been mainly around understanding kind of the public perception of autonomous vehicles.
Okay.
This is why we have kind of a public trial as well, to be able to bring people into the vehicles and start this discussion,
okay.
Think about what people think and feel about the vehicles,
oh, yeah.
But also to start understanding how we can kind of best use these vehicles in the future.
Okay.
And also we have been looking at how cities might be thinking about AVs,
yeah.
And in what sort of mobility challenges autonomous vehicles might be able to solve in the future.
Okay.
Kind of how technology can be developed in a way which actually works for these stakeholders, kind
yeah.
of for cities and for people.
Yeah, because obviously there's potential. People are quite bad at driving, like we're quite good at crashing and there's a lot of road deaths every year. But then the AVs have their own challenges, like not very good at spotting people who cycle or like unpredictable movements and like how does that work in a city environment.
I think you know, a lot of it is being solved and hopefully you will see in your journey today kind of how well the vehicles are kind of
yeah.
picking up these challenges and kind of reacting to them. I think what we're also looking at is how people then react to the autonomous vehicles and what they think about it, because we don't think that this technology can be kind of widely adopted unless kind of people accept it and kind of
yeah.
people also embrace it. So that's one of the things that we're working on. And similarly, cities as well. So AVs is autonomous vehicles are a technology. They're not kind of a solution to any specific problem. So we're trying to understand what the problems are in a kind of an urban transport setting.
Yeah.
And to see how AV as a technology can be used to solve that challenge.
Yeah.
So, you know, it could mean, you know, specialized vehicles, or it could mean kind of minibus services or kind of larger bus services. Kind of, there are various ways that kind of city challenges can be answered, and that's what we are trying to look at.
Yeah, okay. It's like an Uber map.
So we have four vehicles today running in Kidbrook,
yeah.
And we do kind of a figure eight loop. So
yeah.
It has sort of roundabouts, intersections, pedestrian crossings,
yeah.
All sorts of what we call a kind of transport challenges in a way, or
yeah.
traffic challenges.
So these are, the junctions themselves, but are they the kind of main roads? So it's going to be like mainly other vehicles on them?
There are lots of other vehicles
lots
and cyclists
vehicles.
And pedestrians.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. This is a fully public trial,
yeah.
Which means that public can come, but it's also on public roads.
Yeah.
So it's whatever is happening on a road
yeah.
is what the autonomous vehicles are dealing
yeah.
with. This is kind of why we are very excited about it, because this is, I think, the first time that we are doing it in the UK.
So you've been doing these trials?
So we started trials for the public this week.
Yeah.
But we have been kind of running trials as part of this project since the end of last year. So we did a trial in Oxford and one in Birmingham.
Uh-huh.
Because of COVID, we couldn't have people in the vehicle.
Can I have a go on the VR thing?
Yes. Yeah, so
there's a little queue.
One of the guys, I think you're next, definitely.
Okay.
So. Right.
Thank you. So we've got the headset.
Yeah. If you could put just the mask
on. Oh, okay, yeah.
So I feel like a bandit now.
These things make me a bit queasy sometimes.
I want to take off.
Oh, yeah, I've got sunglasses on my head. There's too many things around my face now. I don't know what's going on. Thank you. Okay. Oh, yeah, I've got the thing. I've got my mic thing. Where's the fluffy bit? There. So I press a button on the side. Ooh. Down. That one. Okay. Oh, my gosh. Wow. Ooh, I can do today or tomorrow. Today. And then I can go play. Ooh.
Welcome to the Project Endeavour VR experience. Make sure you look all around you.
Okay. All right. So we just had to go in the virtual pod thing. What do you call it? It's like a little bus thing, like a little minibus pod, the headset on. I got to wear a little bandit mask. Yeah, so you get a little ride around the...
What else? The Tomorrow video.
Yes, I watched the Tomorrow video, yeah. So they have this kind of pod where you... drives itself, obviously, and then there's about 6 to 8 seats inside, and then on the VR headset you get in there and you ride around and different passengers get on and off, and then they have this bike lane in the middle of the road. It's two-way. Yeah, obviously the vehicle detects other people on the road via camera, radar and LiDAR, and pieces them all together to create a picture of the road and what's happening and who's where and what the movements are of different passengers. It was striking. They had a section at night and where passengers get in and out. It was quite interesting, but maybe didn't feel quite as safe as having a driver there. That was their vision of the future. So then I went outside and I spoke to Stephen Kybird, who is the field engineering lead at Oxbotica. So you work for Oxbotica, so you are the robots people.
We are the robots people, yes.
Yeah, okay. So this is like a robot, a driving robot.
Yeah.
Basically.
Our pitch is universal autonomy. So we have one software stack that we call Selenium that runs on road, but we also deploy it off-road in mining environments, in ports, in lots of different areas.
Wow.
So we're demonstrating on-road taxi services and mobility services. But the first place we'll be deploying our technology is not on the road. It's in other more constrained environments to move goods as well as people. Because it's not just about kind of a car and taxis. It's about how we, as we like to say, we as a species move things.
Yeah. So what kind of stuff are you talking about? What kind of environments?
So mostly constrained environments where you can be quite confident on the things that you might meet. There aren't going to be small children running around.
Motorways, are we talking?
No, talking about refineries, talking about mines, talking about ports, those kind of industrial applications where, the whole environment is far more constrained. You don't have lots of different cars driving around and people who might not be most excellent drivers, as it were, going around. So all nicely constrained. The people, the vehicles, everything about it is more constrained, and that makes it a somewhat easier problem to solve.
Yeah.
And that's where we're aiming for the initial deployments of the technology. Okay. So not looking at all like this. It wouldn't be a Mondeo.
A truck or like a mega truck. You get those mega trucks in places like Australia in mines, don't you?
Yeah.
Big operations, big vehicles.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it would be a big truck on a road. There's nothing else on it in a mine environment, in like a quarry other trucks. Yeah,
and other trucks, other vehicles moving around, but all also driven, either also autonomous or driven by other miners.
Could you maybe take the conversation over to the
bus stop?
And when you hear on the radio your AV is ready, you can follow the path into the.
Okay. So we're walking over to the AV. You're just trying to get them in before the ride's in before a deadline or.
Yeah, well, so we've been here for a few weeks preparing and mapping the route. You can see here, you've got one of the cars there out on the route, and that sort of dark line is the route we're...
Yeah, basically it looks like an Uber map, doesn't it?
So we've been here for a few weeks mapping that, and then we had, and this is the end of the second week, we've got 3 weeks of demonstrations, and so we've got getting members of the public into the cars. Our partners, DG Cities, Balash might have told you about some of the research they're doing and looking at the interactions with people and getting into autonomous cars and how might that work and how might the services work at some point in the future when that's sort of ready to be rolled out.
Yeah.
All passengers, AV15 is now ready for departure. Please approach the vehicle using the marked lane. Use both sides of boarding and have a safe trip.
All right, I have to use the mark lane and go over here.
Yes.
All right, thanks, Steve.
No worries.
Okay, got a car with a big, with like a load of cameras on top. In we go. Go in here.
Hello.
Hello, I'm Laura.
Come on, jump in.
Can I come in?
Yeah,
this is exciting. Yes, I'm doing a podcast.
Okay, no problem.
If that's okay.
No problem.
So we're in the car. We've got there's a little screen facing me in the back. We've got two people in the front. What's your names?
So my name's Tristan.
Tristan?
I'll be the safety driver.
Yeah.
This is Dan. He'll be the ACSO.
Hello.
Hi.
What we're going to do is we're going to do a figure of eight around Greenwich. It's about a 25-minute lap that we'll be doing.
Okay.
Whilst we're on the route, we probably won't communicate too much because we'll be concentrating and making sure everything's as safe as possible, especially myself, as I'm in the driver's seat. Can I get you to put your bag on the floor?
Yes, you certainly can.
I don't see any danger of it flying around.
Yeah.
We're just trying.
Sorry, it's because I cycled here and I always end up with loads of stuff.
That's all right.
God knows. Yeah, God knows what's in there half the time, to be honest. I'll put my seatbelt on. So we've got this quite cool screen in the front. It's like a laptop. And we're in a car park off the side of the road. And then there's a road, it's like a bit of a dual carriageway, isn't it? And we can see on the screen all the vehicles going past in little boxes, boxy shapes.
Yeah, it's one of the viewers I have. It basically shows what the car is perceiving.
Yeah.
And what the car's planning to do, so I can make sure it's doing something sensible. And if it's not, I can let Tristan know and he can take control.
Yeah. So it's kind of got a plotted route. You're sitting in the driver's seat, Tristan, but you don't sort of touch the steering wheel unless you have to, or the pedals.
Exactly, unless there is a reason to for safety.
Yeah. Okay.
If you're ready, we'll start the route.
Okay, great.
Thank you. Heading off.
We're setting off. The steering wheels are going steadily. We've got another car coming in. Vehicle's going steadily. It's funny, the steering wheel's turning it all by itself. So, Tristan, your foot's kind of hovering over the accelerator at the moment.
Yeah, so I can revoke autonomy by using the steering wheel or the brake or the accelerator.
Yeah.
Just if it needs, if I need to, I can use those revokes.
Yeah, your hands are hovering by the steering wheel and foot's hovering by the accelerator, but the vehicle's pretty much just driving itself. And it's braking. We've come to some traffic lights. Wow, these screens are quite cool. Got the kind of radar or LiDAR in one screen and then the boxes with the shapes of all the cars on the other. And we're off again. We are going into the junction. We're turning left. Wow, we are self-driving, going dead on 30, and now there's some traffic up ahead, and we are slowing down. And I've got this kind of picture in the back of, I don't know if it's radar or LiDAR, but it's like...
That's the LiDAR from the top of it.
LiDAR from the top, is it?
Yeah.
It's kind of cool because... It's kind of rings, concentric rings around the car, and then you get these contours of other vehicles, and I can see people walking by on the pavement, and their shadows, weirdly, in these lines. It's quite surreal. It's like standing in a dark street at night with a torch, and then you get these shadows and these patches of light and dark, but they're all in these rings that are concentric from the car. Amazing. Now we're in kind of a queue of traffic coming to a roundabout. So we're on the roundabout. I think it went to accelerate, but there was another car coming round. Did you have to put your foot on the brake?
Yeah.
So yeah, it was going to pull out, but people go quite fast around roundabouts, and there was someone whizzing round on our right, so Tristan had to put the brake on. Bit of a sharp stop. Now we're on the dual carriageway. It's quite smooth. It's not going to speed, which is one good thing. Oh, there was a bit of a pedestrian crossing. It kind of stopped midway and the pedestrian light went green, but luckily there wasn't too much traffic. We went forward. And now we're on another roundabout. Not much traffic on this one. It's quite a big roundabout going left. And yeah, off we go again. Whizzing away. Now back up to 30. Oh my gosh, there's some kids on e-scooters on the bike lane.
two up. That was on the other side of the road. Wow. Some people in the van next to us. I'm not sure. They're looking at the car. I'm not sure if he's like semi-interested. It is quite a funny looking thing with the camera equipment on the roof, big white camera equipment. It's funny, it makes these tiny adjustments at the steering wheel, just like you would when you're driving. It's just turning by itself. Now we're on a road with a bus lane on the left. And there's a man on the bike on the right, so I can see him in the LiDAR. Coming the other way, motorbike just went up the bus lane on the inside, I saw that. Oh, there's another one. There's another of the Endeavour cars coming out from the right. Have to wait to turn right. So you put your foot on the brake then, just because we were turning right and there was oncoming traffic. Oh, you didn't have to.
Close, maybe.
Yeah, you had it hovering just in case. Yeah. Because the cars on the other coming the other direction had slowed right down for a pinch point, so they were almost stopped. So I guess there would have been a temptation, maybe, if a car can be tempted.
Yeah, I've always got my feet near the pedal.
Yeah.
Revoke, but yeah, in I can that see. Situation it wasn't a situation where we were close to where I expected it to do something abnormal, so they're just always hovering in that position just in case for safety reasons.
So you're kind of shadow driving, really, aren't you? Your feet and your hands are in the right place, but you're not like touching unless we just passed our first cyclist, but they're in a little lane, one of these lanes with the little pairs of wands. We just had a ambulance pulling across a little distance up ahead, but it braked anyway. Got a moped up ahead. It's kind of braking a little bit. It's got like a bit spooked, I think, by the moped.
I think it's the bollards on the left hand.
Oh, it's confused by the bollards.
It's a bit closer to the car than it would like, so it's slowing down very slightly.
Oh, the pairs of bollards on the cycle lane. Doesn't seem to be doing it anymore. But for a second there, it was spooked. I mean, it's incredibly complex what's going on, isn't it, with all of the sensors and...
Certainly there's lots of computation and lots of information that's processed in order for the car to kind of process the situation and do what it needs to do.
Yeah. Oh, that was an orange light. Is that why it made that woo noise?
Yeah, exactly. It's effectively it needed to get through. It didn't want to stop all of a sudden.
Yeah, because it kind of went orange as we went through, didn't it?
Yeah.
Now we're on a roundabout. We are going fully round the roundabout, and I think this is the end of our little route, and we're on our way back now. Did you steer it into the right lane there?
No.
No, it didn't. It did it itself. Wow. Because there's a kind of the start of a cycle lane along this quite wide road, but at first it's just painted before you get these pairs of bollards again.
A manual confirmation for the slightly dangerous areas.
Oh, okay.
Like a compressor button here. So in certain areas we manually confirm things.
Oh.
Entries to roundabouts and merging with lanes.
So it's kind of asking you a question.
Exactly, yeah. Just trying to keep things as safe as possible because we are the minority on the road.
Yeah.
An autonomous vehicle.
Yeah. So it's kind of asking you if it's doing the right thing. We just had a bus pulled in, a bus stop. And you're kind of clicking the indicator on the left.
That's the last thing I missed. So with junctions and merges and overtakes that are wider than half a metre. So if an overtake is less than half a metre, the vehicle will do it fully autonomously. But if it's wider than that, then I'll manually confirm it.
So you're talking about the size of the vehicle you're overtaking?
It's the distance away from the centre line. So how many metres you are moving to the right to get around the bus, effectively.
Okay.
So it's a manual confirmation on that.
So if it were a like a recessed bus stop, it wouldn't have a problem, or like a semi-recessed bus stop, but because the bus was still sticking out into the lane a lot, it had to ask.
Exactly. So if it could have gotten around the bus by only moving 0.5 of a metre, it would have done that on its own.
Okay.
But if it's larger than half a metre, it requires a confirmation that it's safe to proceed.
Mm. And if you meet someone cycling, and how does it go around them in the absence of a cycle lane? How much kind of space does it give people?
So it does detect cyclists and it will slow down for them. However, our operating procedure says that if we are kind of close to a cyclist, we will revoke autonomy and Tristan will take control. So cyclists are vulnerable road users, so we effectively take control if we're too close to them. Also, if we were to overtake a cyclist, for example, in an area without a dedicated cycle lane, Tristan would take control and do that himself.
Okay.
Safety of the cyclist.
Okay.
So vulnerable road users, we don't want to get too close to.
Yeah. And we're off. We got some people walking along the middle of the road. Oh, that was okay. Oh! And we had an amber light, so it slammed on the emergency stop. Whoops. What was it doing?
So because the light went amber at the very, very last minute, we stop on amber in those circumstances if we're able to do so. It was right on the threshold.
Oh, okay.
So the car threw the brakes on, but it wasn't going to stop before the annotated junction, which is ahead of the actual junction. So effectively it gives control back to Tristan so that he can make sure that we come to a stop safely.
Okay. There's a kind of a little bit of a lurch in between those two.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't seem to... I was expecting it to get spooked by those two guys. They'd kind of walked halfway across the mouth of this quite wide junction and then realised they couldn't go the full way, and they were walking down the middle of the road, basically waiting for a break in the traffic. But the car didn't seem to get spooked by them. Oh, and we're back in the car park. It was good. It was good. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for a smooth ride and for getting us around the course.
Yeah, and, I enjoyed it.
So after I got out the car, I found two of the other members of the public who'd been on the AV. It was Krishnan and Naranjan, who kindly agreed to speak to me about their experience and who happened to actually work in the field.
Yeah.
Yes.
Happy.
So I'm Laura. What are your names?
Naranjan.
Krishnan.
And Krishnan.
Yeah.
Nice to meet you both. What did you think? You've just been in the AV as well.
Yes.
What were your thoughts?
Well, for me, I think it was really fascinating to just see how the technology could work.
Yeah.
I was telling Krishnan that if I was in a car where there was no human sitting in front of the wheel, like, it would be even more mind blowing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think everyone needs to go through a learning curve where people need to understand the technology so they can believe it can work.
Yeah.
So you need to have that human interface in the beginning.
Yeah.
But no, I think it has great potential, and I'm quite excited about it.
Yeah. So were you excited beforehand? That's why you signed up. You like.
Oh yeah,
the
yeah,
opportunity
yeah. Absolutely.
Was there, and you're you're kind of into the. This
yeah,
idea.
And I kind of work in this space as well in the automotive industry. So I'm probably a bit more aware of what's happening in that space.
What do you do?
I'm a consultant, so I work on the consultancy side.
Okay. Technology?
Strategy.
Okay.
Strategy consulting.
Okay.
Operational consulting. Okay. So helping car manufacturers with exactly these problems. Like, how do you make customers pay for them? How do you sell services around them? And that kind of, that kind of stuff.
Okay. What are what's your thinking?
I think that it's going to take a while for people to get used to the technology.
Yeah.
And then it's going to take a while for people to pay for the technology.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a steep learning curve.
Yeah.
It's going to be a while, but I'm excited. Yeah.
Yeah. And what sort of form do you think people will pay for the services? Are you thinking a pod like we saw in the?
Yeah.
Goggles?
Yeah, it could be like Tesla does today. Like they're able to switch on and switch off self-driving software in cars.
Yeah.
So people will pay additional money for that technology.
Okay.
So what they're doing is they build cars to have all the hardware required. And then they build a software that then they charge people for. Mm-hmm. So that's different ways in which they are making money. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's always a numbers game. It's knowing when you can really charge people and what value you can charge them at.
Yeah, I can imagine at the moment. I mean, not that the technology is ready yet, because I don't know about you, but there were a couple of moments there where it was like the thing was a bit confused.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's not there yet. But I mean, yeah, I imagine it would be hella expensive.
Yeah, right now, yeah. But maybe yeah. In the future... You know, we'll get there. Like with EVs, it's the same story. And EVs now, it's taken a long time, but we are getting there. And you still have the infrastructure challenges around electric vehicles.
Yeah.
But it's the industry needs to take that journey to get there.
Yeah. And Krishnan, do you work in this field as well?
In fact, I work for Oxford again.
Oh, do you?
Which is why I'm keeping quiet, and I don't want to influence. But the thing there is, it's all about data, and the more data you have about the environment, the better the vehicles can perform over time. Like you said, it might feel like a new learner driver driving on the road right now, but it's exactly that. You know, it is a new technology, it's experiencing. If you think of it as an entity, it is learning, it's going through the process of learning and understanding the environment around us. Mm-hmm. So with time, with data, and with a lot of different environments coming together, like V2X, vehicle to anything, communication. In the future, traffic signals could start speaking to the vehicles. These vehicles are now being developed with the worst case in mind, so that we are safe.
Yeah.
In that, you don't have to have anything communicating to the vehicle for it to get to autonomy.
Yeah.
But it is also built with the intent to accept a plethora of data. Coming to them. So the more data rich the environment, the better the vehicles will learn, and the faster the vehicles will learn and adapt to the situations as well.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think the reason is for this technology? Because obviously technology is great, but it's not an end in itself. What is the purpose of this technology for you?
Yeah, you can start to see the benefits of this in various different realms of life. Cost is definitely one consideration. So right now, if to make it real, if you look at a different environment from on-road, say for example a refinery which is a kilometer long, and you have multiple different people running around in manual vehicles right there, and their sole purpose is to actually get the vehicle from A to B there. Those are relevant use cases that you can actually start to see the benefit right now. So when you look at that kind of a scale of operation, the operational cost starts to come down when you adopt autonomy. One person can actually start to manage much more than what they can do right now, with the same level of confidence, same level of safety, and so on and so forth. So these are live situations that we are actually having conversations, having trials around, and so on, where the supply network within a refinery could be significantly automated, with autonomous vehicles actually taking stuff from A to B and so on. Safety is the other angle. Hazardous situations where you have a safety risk where you wouldn't want to put people in and so on. So these are situations that are relevant right now. When you translate this to the future, same can be translated to an on-road environment as well. So if you look at a situation where the vehicle starts to learn all of these things, and at some point in the future, you'd start to then see operational benefits. The cost of travel and transit should, at that point in time, come down. There is a journey there to be had. You can start to optimize the whole city. The city planning element could be significantly different in the future because of autonomous vehicles, because of availability of data. When you put all of that together at a super system level, that is when it will take time for us to reach there. One single autonomous vehicle on the road will not help it. But when it is adopted in scale, that is when operational benefits at a city level can start to kind of materialize.
Yeah. So we're talking about like those little pods. kind of flying around?
Yeah, those little pots flying around. And once you start to kind of integrate it into your city planning, right now our cities are developed with vehicles that are manually driven in mind.
Yeah.
When you start to change this discourse, and when you start to think about how we can utilize this data that is coming out to do our planning within the city better, like you saw in the example in the future world, yeah, where you have open spaces, where you have more spaces for people to cycle around, but also operate autonomous vehicles on the side safely in that kind of an environment. Those operational costs, as well as the way we utilize spaces within the city,
yeah,
that could differ. But these are all possibilities.
And I saw a bit of nodding. Are you kind of in agreement? Is that it, what's the purpose of them for you?
Well, I think that ultimately for me, it's how can we get people moving more efficiently, quicker, economically, and in a way that the environment is being protected. And autonomous technology ticks all of those boxes. The potential is there. So I think at that very kind of base level, there is a lot of potential for it. It's the way the world will move. I have no doubt. I think that that's the future for us. It's just how quickly and efficiently we can get to that place.
I guess cars are efficient for certain journeys, but not most journeys, and not like the way that we're using them now. So I don't know how the efficiency comes in for you.
Because, I mean, the question is, what's your definition of a car? So the pod that we saw in the future is technically a car, right?
Yeah.
But it's not a car that you own. It's a car that you use to get from A to B. So ultimately, 100 people using one pod versus one person owning one car, it's not the future. That's the future for me, right? So that's where I think this technology is not just limited to like our traditional view of what a car is. And it opens up so many other possibilities.
Yeah.
And I think like, we're talking pods, but also autonomous buses, autonomous trains. Like, there's so many other applications we can think of. That tells me that it's the place that we need to spend our energy. EVs picked up now that's going to pick up, and that's going to, by 2030, 50% of the roads, the cars are going to be EV.
Yeah.
So that's picking up. I think next we need to put our energy into autonomous vehicle and help it get to a place.
Because I do find it interesting, and I can see the arguments, but also like we already have buses and trains, and like a pod is just a kind of a minibus, really, isn't it? It's like a driver. And I just think like all this technology and all this money that's going into them, it's great, but it's like, is this just a way of selling more cars, or is it actually solving a problem? Because like, you know, you could just get more people on buses, right, and like solve the same problem without all of this like delay, prioritize bus lanes, make buses more attractive.
And
solving the same problem, but not like spending all this money.
So for me, I think there's two answers to that question. One is life saved. So I don't know the statistics and number of people who die in car accidents, but the fact of the matter is AVs will be safer than humans driving.
Yeah.
No doubt. So I think there's a saving lives angle to this argument.
Yeah.
Number two is once you start developing autonomous vehicles, I think actually there are very few people who really want to drive cars anymore. People will just want the flexibility of having a product that they don't own, but they can use, and it gets from A to B safely. Mm. So actually, my expectation is autonomous vehicles will mean lesser cars on the road, not more cars.
Yeah.
So your kind of argument about, is it just about selling more cars? I think initially there is, like, people excited about technology will want to buy autonomous cars.
Yeah.
But ultimately, 50 years from now, I'd be surprised if my kids owned a car. Like, genuinely. Like, I don't own a car. I live in central London. That's the urban trend, but you will see increasingly rural as well. Like, they will pick up that trend of, why should I own a car unless like I'm a farmer and I need a vehicle for that purpose? But otherwise, I actually think it's going to reduce the number of cars on the road.
Yeah,
that's an interesting point there actually, which I didn't talk about previously. But the shared economy, right? As in that will have a, purely from a sales point of view, for automotive sales point of view, looking into the future, that might eventually reduce the number of cars. There might be more cars on the road at one given time. If you look at the utilization of vehicles right now, it's a massive big metal chunk sitting in a place for most of the time, right? And then it's not doing anything.
Yeah.
There's a huge amount of, if you look at an average monthly expenditure, a significant proportion of an individual salary is locked into a metal piece of blob sitting in their garage. So if you look at that from that perspective, right, autonomous, this particular technology, and it will kind of be a booster dose, so to say, to the shared economy, where people will start to think about travel, not about ownership. That whole realm will kind of explode. Right now you have Zipcar and all of the other kind of shared vehicle, but then they are restricted to people kind of interacting and getting the car from A to B, and the logistics behind that.
Yeah.
That is one of the biggest challenges in terms of adopting that kind of a commute modality. And with autonomous vehicles, and if the vehicle can get to wherever it needs to get to, including a maintenance depot, refueling, and all of those things are all done by the vehicle automatically, then people will really start adopting that, and then they'll start thinking about travel, not ownership. They'll start thinking about subscription models to move from A to B. How much does it cost? You know, the whole dialogue and the conversation around that would shift.
Yeah.
But in order for that to happen, the vehicles need to start moving by themselves, and which is the journey that we are on.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's really interesting. Wow. I think I've got the two kind of best informed attendees of this event.
I would be so kind. But no, thank you. And what
thank
podcast
you.
Do you...
It's called Streets Ahead.
Streets.
So finally, we return to Balazs from DG Cities to talk about what they found in their research so far and when that's coming out.
So what kind of sense do you get from your research of how people feel generally about autonomous vehicles?
It's very mixed, really. So there are lots of people who are super positive. They see very nice kind of use cases for their own lives, kind of can see how it could really kind of help and improve their mobility. But there are also people who are kind of concerned. There are genuinely kind of safety concerns. So that's something that we are learning, and that's something that we are trying to kind of better understand, to see how we can maybe change that perception or kind of help to improve almost like the image or of autonomous vehicles, but always considering that it's not only the image but actually kind of the technology to kind of reach that level that people can be kind of trusting towards them. But there is a definite need to allow people to have a look, have it kind of experience them, and that's kind of why we are doing these trials, is because if you never see something, if you're never able to experience it, then how could you kind of make up your own judgments about it? So that's why we feel that these public trials and finding other ways of engaging people like the VR are actually quite exciting.
And do you get a sense of like the proportion of people who think it's a good idea and people who think it's a bad idea?
We're just running through it, but we're going to be publishing kind of the findings of this research in the next 2 months.
Laura, I really enjoyed that. That was really interesting. I love the fact that you seem to be really enjoying yourself. I'm no good at doing those kind of like out and about reports because I just feel really self-conscious. But you weren't feeling at all self-conscious. You were super chatty, weren't you?
I love talking to strangers. It's one of my favourite. It always has been.
When you eventually jumped into the AV pod or whatever, you went, "Hello, I'm Laura." it's just really nice.
The start of it reminded me of, because it was quite familiar in many respects, because it's a car, but so much of it is so different. It reminded me of the first time you ever go to Subway, the sandwich shop, where in all intents and purposes, they are just sandwiches, but you need to understand so much about how to order them and in what order and how the process works that it kind of becomes a bit discombobulating. So
that's a great comparison. Laura, how did you find it? I mean, I was quite struck by, you were obviously, it's quite funny the dynamic inside the pod, because you were obviously going, your foot appears to be hovering over the brake pedal there a little bit, doesn't it? And but sure enough, within what felt like a couple of minutes at this junction, he did have to, it's much sooner than I thought. In this trial, he had to, the operator had to slam the brakes on, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. And it's quite interesting because when we first set off in the car park, and I didn't say anything because I don't go in cars that often. I sometimes drive myself and my boyfriend sometimes drives us. But I was so surprised at how quickly they accelerate. And one thing that I learned afterwards in a chat was that they started off accelerating quite slowly, but then other drivers got quite annoyed with them because everyone accelerates quickly, gets up to speed quickly, and doesn't dally around. And a lot of people don't stick to the speed limit even. But yeah, they had to kind of up the acceleration so as not to annoy other drivers, which I thought was amazing because obviously this thing is learning. And so me and this other chap were chatting to someone at Oxbotica, and they were saying, I was saying, well, other drivers are going to be teaching it as well as the drivers themselves, who are very, you know, you hear from the recording that they're very safety conscious. They're really concentrating on the road, but obviously it's an open environment. So they're learning from other drivers as well. And other drivers are quite often probably more aggressive than they should be. We're probably more aggressive on the roads than we should be as a society. So yeah, that was quite a shock. That was quite a surprise. And so yeah, it tried to pull out at this roundabout, and there was someone coming from the right in a car, and it was faster than the vehicle had realized. And so the guy had to put on the brakes. That wasn't the kind of main emergency stop, but he did have to put the brake on there.
My sort of takeaway from listening to your section was that there does seem to be some genuine use cases for autonomous vehicles to be positive, you know, that I hadn't considered. You know, I think in terms of these kind of controlled closed environments,
yeah,
like
mining,
and yeah, exactly. So I think that's that's something I hadn't considered, and it does, when you've got a very controlled environment, it makes total sense. But one thing I mean I felt quite scared actually, like listening to that, like not just because of what was happening in the vehicle, which, you know, I think it is sort of quite immersive, and it felt like you know, we were there with you, but also scared that the way everyone was talking was almost sort of apologetically kind of trying to justify how this is going to work. It's going to work, and oh no, don't worry about that. That's just something we do. It works, and like, don't worry about it. It's just something we do. And it was it was so and that is the vibe generally, that this is coming whether we like it or not, and we just sort of make the best of it. And it shows the situation with what they have to do around cyclists and around the roundabout and the emergency stop on the amber light shows just how far we are away from this. I thought, actually, I don't know what I expected, but I thought it would be a bit more autonomous than it was. And it shows just how far away we are. And I think at some point people will get impatient in government and actually in other places and just say, sort of, let's just give this a go. Sort of like they have in the US, where Teslas are sort of killing quite a lot of people. And that really worries me.
Is that true, Adam? Have Teslas killed people?
Yeah, I mean, Teslas are the, Laura mentioned it the other week, Teslas are the most dangerous of luxury vehicles. And there are quite a lot of instances and news stories where people in the US have been using autopilot and it's just gone dreadfully wrong.
Drunk or in the back seat or asleep.
Happens with all sorts of horrible frequency. Yeah.
Yeah. The US auto safety regulators investigating Tesla's autopilot system at the moment, following 11 crashes where vehicles in self-drive mode, Teslas in self-drive mode, crashed into parked emergency vehicles. But yeah, it's basically autonomous, but you're supposed to keep your hands on the steering wheel. But all you need to do is tap the steering wheel every now and again to confirm that you're still, in quotes, driving. And people aren't driving. There was one person who was drunk. There was someone who was in the back seat. I think someone might have been asleep, and they just plowed into some emergency vehicle on the side. And yeah, pretty bad.
Crikey.
I know.
I mean, I suppose we have to be, you know, every fatality, whether it's caused by the failings of an autonomous system or caused by bad driving, is should be shocking, shouldn't it? Should be a cause of great regret and concern. So I suppose we do need to be open-minded and evidence-based about all of this, and you know, really look at the potential saving of life, if they are to be believed, that, you know, human error on, I mean, let's face it, probably on the same day that the accident you just described happened, there were probably multiple cases of human failure as well. So, you know, there is, I would still be open-minded to know whether, certainly on some motorway or dual carriageway settings where there's not traffic lights, etc., and pedestrians crossing, I would be open-minded at this point to the possibility that autonomous driving in those conditions at least might be safer.
Yeah.
I would be.
And human error is the number one cause of collisions. And that's one of Absolutely. The big selling yeah. points for autonomous vehicles. Autonomous vehicles can't get drunk. They can't fall asleep at the wheel. I mean, I guess they can malfunction or they can be sure. misprogrammed. But it's obviously a different problem. It's whether one's better than the other, I guess it boils down to.
I was listening to the interviews before we recorded this, and then I popped out on my bike to go and get a sandwich. And on the way back, I was effectively you'd call it a close pass. It was some place I definitely wouldn't have overtaken a cyclist, and I sort of, you know, it was a battered old Merc. And I was just like, and there we go, clearly going above 30. So I was like, I was thinking, would an autonomous vehicle do that? And they clearly would not, if they get this kind of whole cycling overtaken thing done, they are going to be so cautious. And so they will follow the highway code to the letter of the law, because legally they'll have to, which will mean that they'll always give cyclists a meter and a half, and probably give them more because the people are writing the code are kind of adding in a buffer. And the reason that guy overtook me is because he thought he could, and he didn't want to wait. And just going back to what Laura said about people not wanting to wait for autonomous cars to pull out, so they made them a bit faster, I can better see a future where everything is autonomous, but you'll never have that, because you'll never have that kind of switch over point where all of a sudden, you know, even just stopping selling new petrol and diesel cars, which is a massively phased approach, is very, very difficult. So you're going to have this situation where some cars maybe are semi-autonomous or autonomous and some aren't. And the ones that aren't are going to get annoyed with autonomous cars who don't overtake cyclists dangerously. And then you get into a situation where I think, what are they going to do? What are they going to push for? You know, it was the motor industry that basically invented jaywalking as a thing to demonize pedestrians because they were getting in the way and getting killed. So they made the pedestrians to be at fault, ultimately. Jay meant dirty hillbilly back in those times. And I just wonder, you know, I suspect that we're going to be looking at a lot more pedestrian kind of pens, if you like, where you have to sort of be locked in before you can cross the road on green and things like that, because just otherwise the system won't work. Because there's already been a study in Australia that I sent to Laura that is asking people, you know, what should be the penalties for disrupting an electric autonomous vehicle as a pedestrian? Like, should there be fines, for example, for stepping out in front of them purposefully to make them stop or stop them kind of proceeding when they should be? All this stuff is just so, you know, mixture of sociology and the technology. It's absolutely fascinating, if nothing else.
Yeah, and this stuff's inevitable. I mean, I wrote about this a few years ago now, but people were talking about it back then. It's just inevitable that that you're going to have to stop people from, you know, imagine kids having a great time, like stopping in front of autonomous vehicles just for fun, like running out into the streets and like seeing how long they can get them to stop for, or like get them to judder forward a bit. And yeah, I don't know. How are you going to stop that?
Yeah, I mean,
jail children in the Victorian times. They used to for playing on the street. They used to put them in jail. So maybe they'll do that.
Did they? Well, that's they've just made up excuses to put children in jail. It's what they just got their kicks from doing that, I think, for some reason, the Victorians. So there's virtually nothing that children could do back then that didn't put them in jail. Wasn't a great time to be alive for children. I was just going to say, you know, the inevitability of this creep, though, I thought Laura, you made a really good point in one of those interviews with one of your fellow travellers in the pod. You kind of let him state he was quite a believer, wasn't he? He was quite an
yeah,
advocate of how this will solve problems and change urban planning and all this sort of thing. Then you were kind of nodding along, and in your typical way, with your iron fist in your velvet glove, you just came back with, but haven't we got buses? isn't that what buses are for? And don't buses already exist? But then I thought, you know, you're really the really outstanding point behind that objection is, and I referred to it in my introduction before we heard from your thing, is the scale of investment that the government is putting into this. And,
yeah.
And the money that's flowing into this technology could
exactly.
be... It's frustrating. It could be put to so much better use. Maybe not chasing this questionable holy grail.
Yeah. And the time it takes to develop this technology.
Yeah. We could have buses. We could have money for buses.
Modern cars. I don't own a car, as you know. But for work, just recently, I've had to... For bike races that I've been working on, they often provide... They are sponsored in turn by car manufacturers, bike races, ironically. And one leading manufacturer in particular is heavily invested in bike racing. Probably won't say its name. And for two races that I've been working on, including the one I'm working on right now, I've been given a brand new car. And I'm quite unfamiliar with brand new cars, but this slightly goes into the territory that we discussed a few episodes ago when we were talking about distracting screens and all the sort of superfluity of technology in the cockpit of a car. But they already have, you know, there's a creep of semi-autonomous features that are absolutely standard, I suspect, in most normal or, you know, reasonably expensive cars. And some of them are kind of confusing. Some of them are quite cool. They do sort of feel like they're doing a good job rather than a bad job, those semi-autonomous features, I must admit.
What have you got? Lane keeping.
So lane keeping that you know, makes you, if you want to leave your lane, you kind of have to fight the steering wheel a little bit. You have to push through it. It's quite strange because it kind of creates this sort of like it kind of recognizes when you're in. And it is quite startling how this particular car, I guess using a combination of radar technology and camera, you know, interpreting the information on forward-facing cameras, kind of knows where it is. So for example, if you're driving along a dual carriageway and if you can imagine this on your right, you've got a dotted line that can indicate you can cross it, you know, and on your left, you've got a solid line because that's the edge of the road. But then sometimes that solid line becomes dotted as you approach a junction as well, doesn't it? Or for other reasons. There's a display right in front of me in the steering wheel that says which lane you're in and has a little green thing saying we've got you in this lane now. But it also has a solid line if the line in the real world is solid. And as soon as that line changes to a dotted line, it reads that, and within a fraction of a second, it's showing you a dotted line. And it's kind of reassuring, and it's very, very accurate, and it's kind of reassuring that it's that good and that reliable. It does know where it is in your car is exactly. And then there's other thing I noticed last night. So last night, after a long day of traveling, I had to drive from Stralsund to Schwerin, which is a 2.5-hour drive. And it was the end of a long day and I got tired, and it noticed a few little bits of crap driving on my part. It had to warn me repeatedly that I wasn't in the center of the lane, which it did. And then after I'd done that, I was slightly late just getting onto an exit as well. It was like, oh Christ, I've got to get over because now I nearly missed my exit. Those sort of typical things you do when you're a bit tired behind the wheel that can be fatal, you know, can result in a really high speed fatal accident. It actually said, you need to stop. We've detected too many instances of tiredness behind the wheel.
Wow.
And that, I thought that was quite interesting.
That's amazing.
It's also, it has other bits of technology where that are designed, I think, to eradicate that blind spot that you're all taught about when you're learning to drive, isn't it? The thing that makes you look over your shoulder.
Yeah.
You have to, because that's the bit you can't see. So it has a little orange light that flashes when something is in your blind spot. And that catches your eye. And it seems, again, to be phenomenally accurate. And that could well be a cyclist. It works with a cyclist being there. All that stuff, I think, is pretty positive. But ultimately, it was me behind the wheel, for better or worse, right? And actually, possibly on yesterday's example, for worse. You know, it wasn't my finest moment. So I don't know. I don't know where I stand on any of this. That's a long-winded way of saying I don't know what to conclude.
And just quickly, and one thing that Balash said that I cut out because the sound wasn't great, was that another reason for having this kind of technology would be, like, you know, if you go out for a Sunday roast and you have a couple of pints, or if you're elderly and living in the countryside and you can't drive anymore, or you're disabled, or any number of reasons. So yeah, just to add to your your reason?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be a hell of a lot of work done before we allow drunk people into autonomous vehicles. I mean, like the other thing, I know you said that, oh, we've invented buses. Well, the other thing with the, but you've invented taxis. We already have taxis, and you know, I think Uber is in many ways, you know, not a good organization, and you know, the Ubers are too cheap. Ultimately, they're falsely cheap. They should be about a third more expensive than they actually are. But you know, you can get an Uber to the train station or whatever for £5, £6. Let's say it should be £8 or £9. I can't see autonomous vehicles being any, if we do talk about this kind of future where we don't own vehicles, if that is to be true, I can't see a situation where, you know, having £6 or £7 worth on an autonomous vehicle is going to be any different to having a taxi driver, except you just get rid of the driver. It doesn't really solve a problem. It's hard to know
because obviously the huge amount of money that's being spent just making this technology is like, has got to be paid back to someone, is the other thing. But yeah.
Just finally, one of the points that I was thinking about listening to it is we have because of the technology involved, and this is, I think, has been the process for the whole of the auto car or the automobile, is, Laura, you only really spoke to men, and they all seemed like engineering folk or people who were interested in engineering, not exclusively, but you know, there was a certain vibe of like, I'm interested in the tech, I'm interested in the future, our cities could change, this is what it could be like. And I'm very worried because we've learned over the several, you know, decades of modern design of town and city centres that if you let men design them, they can be pretty damn awful and pretty poor in terms of focusing on the dominant, you know, strong car users and forgetting about other more vulnerable road users. And there is a vibe, I think, of this like high-tech world that, and of course the people designing these autonomous vehicles are likely to be men sat in rooms without windows and all that, and also, stuff's quite troubling, isn't
also,
it?
Also, like, yeah, women don't use cars as much. Women don't have access to cars as much. Like I said, I was sat in that kind of pod thing at night and I was thinking, not sure how comfortable I'd feel without a driver. I mean, if it was just you and then someone who looked a bit dodgy got in and started looking at you in a funny way and there's like no one around, I don't know. And it's if you have like mobility needs or access needs that the vehicle can't comprehend. There's certainly a lot of problems. It's a complicated one, but yeah, an interesting experience anyway. And it was nice to be able to get to share the kind of the experience. But I think ultimately it's a sort of solution looking for a problem. And that was something that people kind of openly talked about. So, I mean, is that the right way to go about transport? Or, yeah, if you're designing something, surely you look at the user first, what are their needs, and then not the technology first.
Yeah. Well, very, very interesting. And it was good to learn that autonomous vehicles could be used in mines to presumably get more,
that's also
get more
very fossil, environmentally friendly.
Get some more coals and fossil fuels so we can build more autonomous vehicles.
More faster, bigger, yeah.
I think that's what they call the circular economy.
Oh, dear. Well, Adam's clearly made his mind up about autonomous vehicles. But Laura, how nice for you to have got to Kidbrook. That's a lovely part of the world. Southeast London's most completely socially cleansed district since they tore down the Ferrier estate to build presumably that very smart housing estate that you were driving around.
Yeah, it was, yeah. I didn't realise it was like that down there. It's incredible. Yeah,
it didn't used to be until the developers changed everything. So there we go. On that note, well done, Laura. Thank you very much. We'll have to think about sending you out on a weekly basis, I think, to do these reports, because that was very interesting.
I had fun.
Thanks, Adam. I'll speak to you when I get back eventually from my travels. And in the meantime, you've been listening to Streets Ahead, as if you didn't know it. Let us know what you think at Pod Streets Ahead. Rate us, review us, and share the podcast with anyone you think might enjoy it. And we'll catch you next time. From me, Ned, goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.